saying at the end of the other tape was that one of the owner's sons, who was a year behind me in high school, he and I pulled the hose around, turned through the office window on the safe, and kept the safe cool down where it could be opened, and he could get out all the records, particularly accounts receivable in the safe, and helped out considerably. This fire started at about 4 o'clock in the morning, or it was discovered about 4 o'clock in the morning at any rate. Never did know what started it, and it was somewhere 8 to 8:30 when it died down enough and we could get enough water on it to put all the fire out and cool it down. About 10 o'clock, we started moving and cleaning stuff up, cleaning up and tearing out the old building, that ashes and one thing and another and debris from the fire, and getting permission from the Ford Motor Company to start disposing of all the stuff and how we were supposed to dispose of it. All parts were supposed to be that had been in the fire were supposed to be beat with hammers to where they could never be used, and hauled off and buried. So the rest of the day and all the next day was spent in doing that. There was a wrecking company got there the next day and wanted to buy the stuff. We would not sell it to them because Ford Motor Company said none of those parts should ever be used in any way, shape, or form to be sold. And that is the way we did it. We didn't want any parts to get out and be used and then come back on us for selling used parts that had gone through a fire. As I remember, this happened on a Tuesday morning, and we worked hard all the rest of that week at disposing and cleaning off the old burnt stuff and disposing of it in accordance with the Ford Motor Company instructions, and that included 10 brand new cars, Model T Fords, that had never been, had the motor started on them, and several, I think there were 4 cars in there in storage, so that the loss was quite heavy. As in those days, insurance couldn't be got on a fire in a garage to cover stuff in there, and all garages had large signs up, not responsible for cars in storage because of the loss of cars in storage because of fire or theft. The old night man that was in the garage, when he'd left out of it after he was awakened by the fire, he grabbed the cash register, which was a very large electric machine, and carted it out into the street and saved it. We'll never know how he did that, because it took all two of us wanted to do to carry the thing off and put it in in safekeeping. On the Monday after the fire, Monday afternoon, had arranged for a old shed building that could be easily moved, to be moved in and placed on a place where we could store have parts and whatnot, quick as we could get them. On Tuesday, a whole carload of stuff came in, like all kind of parts for Model Ts that were need to be on hand, and such as timers and other parts that were quite needed for repairs at all times. Wednesday morning opened up for business again, practically on full scale. On Thursday, a boxcar load of new Model T Fords was received, and we went to work setting them up, and as quick as they were ready to go, they were sold, so that by the end of the week, we were out of new cars again, and order had been placed for another car load, and they arrived over the weekend. The old fellow that had been staying in at the garage all night, sleeping in there, as a night man, had got some smoke inhalation, and he wasn't feeling too good, so they told him to take off on a vacation, and got me to stay in there at night, as I didn't have any room or anything, that I was sleeping in the, camping out in the park. And so I moved into the shed and stayed all day at night, which increased my income somewhat, because they paid me $2.50 for staying in there at night. That second week after the fire, we also received a couple more carloads of new cars and got them set up and ready to sell. And that second weekend after we'd opened up proved to be a large sales day. As they closed the garage on Saturday at noon and all day Sunday, except for me being there looking after things. And during that Saturday afternoon and Sunday, I sold most of the new cars that I had on hand and had the cash in the, a lot of it was cash, there was a few checks, but mostly cash. Had it in the safe. When the two owners came in on Monday morning, wanted to know where all the new cars had gone, I said I sold them. And I checked them, gave them all the money, and they counted it out. They said, boy, you really did a job. And paid me a nice healthy commission of about $200, which helped for the next year in school. I stayed in this garage until about a week before the time to go back to school, when that week the old regular night man came back. It happened to be about 2 months that I stayed in there. Twice I thought I was trying to be held up. I got the drop on him with a 38 six-shooter that I'd been loaned while I was in there. And I could had a little porthole I could look out of, see who was wanting in, and twice I figured that all they wanted was in to rob me. And when I looked out through the porthole and stuck the gun out, asked them what they wanted, one bunch quickly left, and another bunch said, well, they just wanted a little gasoline. Well, a little gasoline was all they wanted. Was all their tank held was 2 gallons. I might say that I put that 2 gallons in with my left hand while holding the six shooter in my right hand and keeping my eye on those fellows. Last day of August, I left the garage and went home to Woodward, where my folks were out living, and getting ready to go back to school. My father was running a livestock yard. Principally, he was buying hogs, shipping them to California. And he had a pickup that he was using there. Said they didn't need the old 10-year-old Model T Ford anymore. So I drove it to down to college that year. I had to get a permit from the college to keep it there. And because a student was supposed to have a college unless he had a permit and registered with the college. And they people took one look at the thing and decided that there wouldn't be any great deal in me having a old 10-year Model T Ford, and that you had to crank and everything else. They decided that it wasn't dangerous to the morals of the college for me to have it there. I enrolled that year then, designated as a mechanical engineer. I had originally thought I'd be an electrical engineer, but after that first year and then working in the garage that summer, I decided that mechanical engineering would be more interesting to me. So I enrolled in mechanical engineering school and I've never regretted it. Halloween was on a Saturday that year, and I got up Sunday morning, looked out of my window in the dormitory, and my old Model T Ford was gone. So after I ate breakfast, I started out to look for it. I had a suspicion that it was taken by somebody and parked at a sorority house. The first sorority house I came to was the Kappa Alpha Theta, and there it was on their front porch. There was some girls trying to start it. They had no idea how to get it started, and I was walking along, one of them hollered, says, could you help us start our car? And I said, where did you get there? They said, we just found it and we woke up this morning. I went up and I began to do what had to be done to get the whole thing started. They says, you seem to know a lot about this car. I says, yeah, it's mine. I says, I don't know who was so kind as to bring it down here over for Halloween, but I said, I'll get her started easy enough. So I got it started and easily backed it down the steps off of the front porch. And then the girls wanted to take a riding in it. And one of them said she knew how to drive it. She did know how to drive it all right. might accept it. She didn't know that there wasn't any brakes on it, that you had to use a reverse pedal to stop it. So she drove it around the block, four or five of them in the thing, got back, went right past the house again. She was going to stop and get some of the other girls, but she didn't know how to stop it. So went around again, block, came back, and she hollered at me and says, well, how do I stop it? So she was going pretty slow. I went out, jumped on, and said, you have to use the reverse pedal to, as a brake. So we went on around the block, got back that time, and used the reverse and turned in and stopped it. A bunch of other girls got in, and they rode around the block a couple times. And that time the old house mother had got out there, and so she wanted to ride. So the girl took her around the block a couple times and came back, then they let me have it back. Two of the subjects I had to take that quarter was analytical geometry and trigonometry. And I thought I was real good in math, though I didn't put in the time that I should on those two subjects, and consequently flunked them both. So I had to take them over the next quarter. The next quarter I really got down and dug and passed them both without any trouble. Another subject that gave me trouble was engineering chemistry. Chemistry was the bane of my existence, and I had trouble with it. I ended it up as the second quarter. I ended it up as a incomplete. I had to take a special examination. I talked to the old professor that taught it. What should I study for this examination? And he told me what I should get to work on, so I dug into that and passed the examination with flying colors, so I didn't have to take it over, thank goodness. Still, I am not, to this day, I am not too hip on chemistry. This exam came, of course, at the quarter ended just before Christmas vacation, and then I drove the old Model T home for Christmas. A couple of boys rode with me. We made it without trouble and in good shape. While I was at home for Christmas, I was acquainted with some other boys that were home for Christmas, and one boy that lived next door to me was just finishing high school, and he came over one day and he says, get your buddies and well, let's go hunting for quail. Quail season was open, he said, and that he knew where we could go. So we got our guns and ammunition and got in the car with him, and he took us down to a filling station. An old fellow in there, and he told us about the old fellow. He said he'd had a big ranch out there on outside of Woodward, and he'd retired off the ranch and moved into town. Got tired of sitting around, so he took over a filling station and was operating it. And we went in there, and this boy that lived next door to me says, Pop, he said, we want to go hunting. Why, he said, fine. Go out there on that ranch. He says, nobody will bother you. It's posted. Nobody can come in. He said, you'll have 19,000 acres. You can roam over and do all the hunting you want to. Now, he said, I've got to tell you, though, that you know that there open season on prairie chickens. He said, and there's lots of prairie chickens out there. And he said, as I said, it's against the law to shoot them. But he said, those prairie chickens out there, so many of them, they're just getting vicious as all get out, and they'll attack you. And when they attack you, you've got to defend yourself. And that way, when they attack you that way, why, it's not against the law to shoot one. So we went out there, and we found quail, and as he said, there was a lot of prairie chickens, and there was five of them attacked us, and I mean, they just attacked us terribly. Just about to peck our eyes out, I think, when we shot them. And so we go back in, we took one of them by the hill fellow's place and gave him some quail, too, and one prairie chicken. He says, I told you those mean, vicious prairie chickens out there. He said, you got to defend yourself when they attacked you. New Year's Day came on Saturday, and another boy and I decided we would go back to school that day because school was going to start on Monday again. So this one fellow that, one of the fellows that had ridden up with me from over Christmas vacation, he was going back, the other one wasn't, and we went back on New Year's Day back to Stillwater and checked into our dormitory, and they, of course, then it was time to get a license tag for the old Model T, which ran about $12, and I didn't want to put out any $12, so I said another old boy that had an old stripped down Ford, and the tires was bad on it. The tires on my Model T were quite good. Not terribly. They'd been about 4,000 miles probably, and the tires at that time, you got 8,000 to 10,000 out of tires, you were doing very good. So I went over to him and I said, what do you give me for that old flivver of mine? And he says, I'll give you a $10 bill. And I says, you bought a car. So he gave me the $10 bill, and I figured I was some $20, $25 ahead on not having to buy a license and getting $10 for it. Sunday morning, as I was passing the house mother's office and rooms, she called me in, and she says, your roommate has got another boy that wants to live with him, and he wants him as a roommate. They're from the same town, and we have a room. There's a fellow up here in a room that needs a roommate, and I'd like to have you room with him, as you're a fellow of outstanding Christian qualities. She said, I don't know why she thought all that, because as I said earlier, that I'd never gone to church there in Stillwater. Anyway, she says, I think he is bootlegging liquor, and I'd like you to go in and room with him, and so that we can stop that bootlegging if he is. I know you're a law-abiding citizen. So I said, well, I'll room with him. And moved in with him. And first thing I told him, I said, now, Elmer, Mother McNabb said that she thought you was bootlegging, and I don't want to be in a room where there's any liquor. I don't like it, and it's ruinous liquor, and it's against the law, and She says, I'm a law-abiding citizen, so I hope you won't bring any of it in here if you are bootlegging. And he says, well, I was thinking about getting out of the business anyway. He says, I've got some old stuff here. He says, it's not even fit to drink. He said, I tasted it and I wouldn't sell it to my worst enemy. So he says, I'm going to pour it down the sink, which he did. And he never did bring any more liquor in. I don't know whether he kept up his bootlegging activities on the outside or not, but he never did bring any more into the room. He was also in love with motorcycles. He had a small motorcycle, but sometime not long after I'd moved in with him, he had a chance of trading that motorcycle for practically a brand new Harley Davidson with a very little bit to boot, I think $50-$60 to boot. And it was a real high-class, up-to-date motorcycle at that time with a rumble seat. And it was a really swanky motorcycle. And he had me go riding with him a time or two. And he was a very safe and conservative driver of motorcycles, which I liked. And he leave town occasionally. His folks would come by and pick him up, or they didn't live far from Stillwater. Then so he'd leave me the key to the motorcycle and said, if you want to take a ride, why, go ahead. Very seldom I did, because I wasn't hip on motorcycles. However, one day I decided I would see if I could ride the thing, and I was getting ready to start it. And a fellow that I knew quite well there in the dormitory came along about that time. He said, oh, you're going to ride old Elmer's motorcycle? I said, yeah. He said, let me drive it. He says, I like to drive a motorcycle. And I said, well, have you ever driven one? Oh, yeah. And he got on the thing, and we started off, and it wasn't very long, but I knew I shouldn't have got on or let him ride it, because he was a stunt driver deluxe. He liked to get out on the streets and get the thing going about 40 miles an hour and then stand up on it. Stand right up on the seat. And I'll tell you, I sat very rigid and straight and not wobble any on that rumble seat, because that wasn't my idea of fun at all. Quick as I could get it off, I got on and I said, I'll drive her back. And he said, oh, you scared of me? I said, yeah, you doggone right I'm scared of you riding that way. Elmer was a brilliant student, particularly in mathematics. I had to pour and dig and fume and work to get calculus, and he would be out someplace on a date or something and come in and 10, 11 o'clock at night, when I'd been putting in maybe 3 hours on calculus, he would come in and he'd say, well, how's the calculus? It was rough. And so he'd grab up the book and look at the assignments. We was taking the same class. He'd look at the assignment, oh, that's not so bad. And in about 30 minutes, he'd have everything, all the problems we were supposed to have worked out. And everything else, he got very simply that way. He could sit and study assignments in anything for an hour, and I don't think he ever had a grade below an A. But he was just absolutely void of any idea what to do with his life. So he finally told me then that near the end of the year, near the end of the year, the second quarter, third quarter, he said, I'm going to leave school now and I'm going to join the Air Corps and get in Kelly Field and learn to be a fighter pilot. And he did. And he was getting along and was out in Kelly Field, San Antonio, and he had the highest grades. He was going to have the highest that there ever was. And this was some 2 years later. I'd got out of school and had gone to work at the time. And he started out on his triangulation cross-country flight